Good morning, good afternoon. Thank you for standing by. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Please go ahead. Your line now open.
Thanks very much. Good day, everyone. This is Craig Schwartz, and it's Thursday, the 14th of January. Welcome to this Zone File Access Advisory Group conference call. I'd like to just go ahead and jump right into the agenda, starting with item one, which is administration, and we'll start with the roll call. Mikey O'Connor?
Hey, here. Sorry, I didn't realize I was first.
That's okay. John Levine?
I'm here.
Thanks, John. Nacho, I know, is on the phone. Adam Palmer? I don't believe Adam or David are going to be with us today. David, are you online? David Maher? Vladimir?
Yes, I'm in.
Hi, Vladimir. Brian Cute, I know, will not be with us today. Tom Barrett?
I'm here.
Hi, Tom. Paul Stahura? Rick Wilhelm? James Beleda will not be with us today. Tatiana, I know, is on the line. Rod Rasmussen is on the line. How about Rod Dixon? Joe St. Sauve?
This is Joe.
Hi, Joe. Wang Wei? John Christoph? Jonathan Frakes?
I'm here.
Hi, Jonathan. Teresa Lopes? What about Asif Kabani? What about Barry Cobb?
Present.
Morning, Barry. And Susan Prosser? What about John McCormick?
I'm here.
Great. And from ICANN staff, Dave Piscatella, are you on the line? Kurt Pritz, I heard already once. Francisco Arias?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning, Francisco. Kim Davies? And Mark McFadden, I know, is on the line. Is there anyone who's on the line that I didn't call out by name?
Yeah, Craig, it's Ken Stubbs.
Ken Stubbs. So we got you on the list, Ken, for the email. Now we need to get you on the list for the roll call. Great. Thanks, Ken. So moving on to more administrative items in the agenda, just a reminder to please submit your statement of interest by tomorrow. And what we'll do is close off new additions to the group by the next call, so that way we keep the flow of this group moving along. I think we have statements of interest from just about everyone. There may be one or two missing. And what I'll do is email you directly, not via the list. I also want to let the group know that following last week's call and the outreach for a co-chair representative from the registry stakeholder group, that Vladimir Shadrinov from Telnik has volunteered to serve as co-chair, and James Bladel, who had been co-chair, had volunteered to step down in order to make room for a registry operator. So we thank James for his participation the first couple weeks and continued if he's able, and welcome Vladimir as one of the new co-chairs.
Thank you.
So item 1.2 is discussing the call time, and it was brought to my attention yesterday that there's a conflict for some doing the call at this regular time because of a GNSO PPSC PDP working group meeting. And I guess there are at least a couple of conflicts for folks. We could talk about either doing the meeting, well, A, we could determine just how many conflicts there are. So I guess what I would ask you to do is Just send a quick email to me to let me know if this time is bad for you, and then we can work around that. Another option would be either to do the call 2 hours later, or we could possibly do it at Friday, meaning tomorrow morning, at this regular time. So if we could have, you know, 2 minutes of discussion about whether we need to consider doing this later. Or, you know, actually, why don't we just do it on the list instead of taking time this morning? So if folks could just send a note to the list to let me know if they have a conflict, and if they do, what the preferred time would be, 2 hours later on Thursdays or doing this call Friday morning, we'll get this sorted out before next week's call.
Hey, Craig?
Yep.
This is Rod.
Hi, Rod.
One thought on that is if you have several people with conflicts, to set up a doodle poll with those different, you had, I think, 3 different alternatives already now, 2 hours from now on Friday morning, and see what the schedules look like for everybody.
Yeah, we could. If we get enough conflicts, then I'll send out a doodle for those 2 additional times. Thanks, Rod. Review and amend the agenda is next. I would just ask if there are any comments or questions about the agenda before we move along. Hearing none, review the open action items, which is below item number 5 on the agenda. The first open action item was articulation of a CRISP problem statement, and we made some revisions to that based upon last week's call, and we'll get to that item in the agenda in a few moments. Regarding the comments and analysis for version 3 of the applicant guidebook, we should get those from ICANN, someone in Kurt's shop, hopefully sometime in the next week. So, the third item was for the registries to consult amongst themselves regarding a potential co-chair, and we've already discussed that Vladimir has stepped up to do that, and again, we say thank you. Fourth item was follow-up with VeriSign regarding their 2009 zone file access audit, and we'll get to that item in Section 4 of the agenda. Revisiting the community concerns with participation of larger registries or with a registry stakeholder group as a whole, and we'll get to that as item 3 in the agenda. And then item number 6 was to check with affiliates to see if zone file access consumer information can be shared with the group. That was something that Brian Cute said that he would take on. Ken, do you know what, if anything, might have happened with that?
No, I can't answer that. Brian was dealing with our technical people there, and we'll just, my suggestion would be just to send him an email and follow up that way.
Okay, I will do that. And then the last administrative item before I turn the meeting over to Rod and to Vladimir is a quick discussion about the mailing list archive. And from the very first call, we talked about the possibility of sensitive information being discussed and maybe not making that available on our public information page. And so what we have been doing is selectively posting the MP3s that we agreed to post. But as most folks know, the mailing list archive is still public. And if we're actually going to be discussing issues on the list, we probably should have a discussion about whether the list continue to be public or not. And I open the floor to discussion about that. I will note that on the Zone File Access Information page, I'm working with Dan Halloran over the next day or so to add some general information to the web page about the group, but also to include some kind of general comment that basically we'll say not all information is publicly available. So I'll get back to the group on that shortly. But for a 2 minute or 3 minute discussion on the openness or keeping the mailing list archive, folks on the call.
This is John Levine. Given the size of this group, honestly, I think it would be naive to assume that anything we said was truly confidential. So I don't see much point.
This is Mikey.
Yeah, Mikey.
I tend to agree with John. I like them open. If we've got stuff that's super secret, we'll have to figure out a different way to handle it. But I like the transparency of an open list.
Which is the reason, you know, that it was set up that way. Others on the line?
This is Jonathan. I kind of have to parrot what they're saying. I think now with what John said with the size of the group, I think anything really proprietary or sensitive, we may handle on the call or be able to kind of address directly. So the lists may as well stay open from my point of view.
Okay. It sounds like we're agreeing that the mailing list archive should continue to be open to the public. So we'll leave it at that. And Rod, can I? I'd like to turn the call now over to you and Vladimir. Vladimir, I know you're new as co-chair, and Rod and James and Dave Piscatello and I usually have a call a day or two before this conference call, just to do planning and organizing around the agenda. So you came on as co-chair, you know, right after we had that last planning meeting. So, you know, certainly chime in where you'd like to and where you're comfortable. And I think Rod will probably, you know, have the most to say on today's call. So, Rod?
Yeah, thank you, Craig. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to rely on you largely on this one, Craig, because I'm just now leaving my house to drop my kid off at school. So,
okay.
Many of you know from other calls I'm on, while I'm awake at this time, it's never convenient. So, could you remind me what the first scheduled item was topic of discussion?
Sure. The item is the agreement to the amended problem statement, and what we talked about on last week's call was the possibility of separating the problem statement that we had into a more defined problem statement, and then a solution space or a requirement statement. So I'm sort of presuming that you don't have that text in front of you right now.
That would be correct. And I just wanted to say here that we had, I don't know if it got sent to the list or not, but we had a proposed kind of shorter statement, and then captured the thoughts that had been sent in by many. And thank you all for great input on that. As kind of this requirements or goals or things like that. If you want to go ahead and read that off and we can get comments from the list on where we're at, that would be great.
Well, it did get circulated to the list yesterday, so I don't know that we necessarily need to take we'll read it because you're in the car. So the problem statement is the current model for zone file access is built on individual bilateral agreements between consumers and providers of data. Scaling this model into an environment where there are many consumers and providers will create both operational and cost problems for consumers of data. A new model for zone file access that can scale in both the current environment and in an environment including new TLDs is needed to address these concerns. So that's what the problem statement has been modified to. And I'll go ahead and I'll read the solution space and requirement statement, and then we can open the floor to a discussion of both of these. So the statement, the solution space statement is, solutions for multilateral, scalable, secure, and consistent zone file access may be implemented as a complementary solution to the existing bilateral approach. Any solutions must recognize that the record types or data contained in the zone files may vary in new emerging registry models. Additionally, improving the current model will also provide opportunities for operational and cost improvements for producers of data. Any new model for zone file access must be resilient and defend against abuse through both administrative and technological means, and should preserve or enhance existing models of access for legacy consumers. Access to zone data should be granted on an equal, non-discriminatory basis among qualified consumers. Nothing in the new model for zone file access should limit any registry's ability to innovate or provide new products and services. That was a rather lengthy one. So I'd like to open the Rod or Vladimir, if you'd like to make comments on this, and then open the floor to participants to chime in either in support of or with additional comments.
Yeah, this is Kent Stubbs, Craig. Will you put me in the queue, please?
Sure.
This is Jonathan. I'd like in, too.
Okay.
Mikey here.
Well, this is Rod. I don't have anything to add at this time. I'd love to hear what other people have to say.
All right. Why don't we start with Ken Stubbs?
Yeah, Craig, I'm having a lot of trouble understanding the justification for the zone trial access policy that is being proposed here. First of all, please correct me if I'm wrong. Those of you who have more information on the existing CCTLDs, but none of the top 10 largest seats. CCTLD even offers on-trial access, and most others apparently have chosen not to provide it either. So I guess the point I'm saying is you're talking about consolidating it and trying to create an argument for it, and it would seem to me that at this point in time, there just isn't enough justification for doing it. Also, the reason most of the CCTLDs don't even offer it is their concerns over abuse. So,
Makes
sense.
Okay, so Ken, I'd like to get to the abuse, you know, talking more about the abuse when we get to item two in the agenda. But zone file access now is part of every TLD registry agreement and will continue to be so. So I think what we're talking about is a way to continue to make that available, but in a more efficient manner for consumers. Jonathan, you're next in the queue.
Okay. Hi. Thank you. There was some discussion in the mailing list about the F word, free, that we don't use the word free anymore in the access, and I believe there's little or no cost to people to access the zone file currently.
Right.
That's correct.
Could folks who are not speaking please mute their phones? Jonathan, you actually have the floor at the moment.
Well, I think that's the primary point, is that we lost the word free.
Okay.
Or low cost, or identifying any, you know, how priced here. I think we allege it, but we don't necessarily state it overtly. And then there was the other point that I had made. I think we're okay not to have it, but that there would be new record types potentially available inside of a zone file that differ from what we have now.
Which we do capture in the solution space and requirement statement.
Okay.
Yeah, we say any solution must recognize that record types or data contained in the zone files may vary in new emerging registry models.
Right.
Mikey, you're next in the queue.
Could I interject a comment here, please?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we had, there was a discussion on that, on Jonathan's point on the free aspect of the current model, and that we wanted to continue that, or at least lay that out in the requirements area. I guess we need to make sure we get that concept captured there as well, if it's not in there right now.
Craig, will you put me back in the queue, please?
I will. Mikey, do you want to go ahead?
Me too. Anybody else want in the queue before I start? This is Mikey.
This is Joe. Can I also get in the list?
You sure can.
And Tom.
Yeah, Mikey. Yep, got you, Tom.
This is Mikey. The one thing that I'd like to add to the problem statement is at the end of the first sentence, or second sentence, where it says cost problems for consumers of data, I really think that it's fair to say that there are cost problems for consumers and providers.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So that's my one little tweak. I really think that one of the major justifications for this will be to reduce the cost of providers so that they're not having to send bandwidth over and over again, shipping files over and over again. That's all.
Thanks, Mikey. Ken, you got back in the queue.
Yeah, the reason I got back in the queue was because I made a statement initially, but I didn't get a chance to follow up on the response. I recognize that zone file access is part of the regular contracts of all of the current TLDs, but the idea of centralizing it is the concerns that we have. In other words, ICANN would be given the decision as to who is entitled to this. And from a practical standpoint, you would also deal with all of the compliance decisions. And I'm going to be frank and say that ICANN has not necessarily been as responsive on compliance issues, and we would be very concerned about the ability to respond on a timely basis to noncompliance. So, I mean, you know, we, at this point in time, the registry operators, it's our position we would rather be able to manage the zone file access on an individual registry-by-registry basis. Also, really, ICANN has not really provided a clear solution. And I think before you can get people to buy into this idea, you know, it's very esoteric to talk about cost savings, so forth and so on, but I think you need to be, we need much more specificity before we can really consider an option like this.
Joe, you are next in the queue.
I just wanted to make sure I went ahead and iterated the importance of also considering things like alternative distribution means, things like DVDs. I mean, for some folks who have good network connectivity, they don't really have issues downloading the files over the network, but for other folks who may be in the third world in particular, it's going to be a real challenge for them as the zone files continue to grow in size. And then the other thing I also wanted to go ahead and make sure got on the record was the importance of perhaps offering alternative tailored formats. So folks who only have interest in limited fields can perhaps go ahead and just obtain those fields. So as we think about the zone file access, I think it's more than just the one-to-many or bilaterals. I think it's also important to consider the distribution channels and the formats.
Yeah, I thought we talked about that a little bit last week, in that if we look to a third, just we'll call them a third-party aggregator to provide the service, that they could, as a value-added service, provide different types or different formats of distribution. They also might be able to provide different levels of service, that is, the entire zone file or just specified fields within the zone file. So that, to me, sounds like it would be something built into the requirements, well, the possibility of providing those different types of levels of service built into the requirements for, you know, an aggregator or a third-party provider of the service.
I just wasn't sure if that was really captured in the current statement.
Okay.
Do we have anybody else in the queue there, Craig?
Yeah, we have Tom.
Okay, sorry.
Put me in after Tom, please.
Yeah, this is Tom. I just wanted to make the point that today's registry agreement with ICANN does not specifically say that zone file access should be free. And in fact, the agreement that you signed with the registry has a blank where supposedly the registry can put in what the cost would be, and so far apparently this cost has been zero. In terms of what the cost might be going forward, my thinking is no matter how economical a new scheme may make sense, it's still a change from what they're doing today. And something that they'll want to, we'll see as an opportunity to start charging access to. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. And Ken, you wanted back in the queue.
Yeah, I'm just giving another item to respond to. I think at some point in time, I'm going to recommend that we have somebody representing SECSAC discuss one of the papers that they wrote on. Who is services source for email address for spammers and some of the recommendations they made. I think it would be a good idea to get the security committee's perspective on this process. also with respect to the comment that Tom made, Tom, there's no clear path that would not indicate that ICANN may elect down the road to charge fees to users. So, I mean, at this point in time, the registries have not charged a fee, and I think to indicate that we could possibly use that as an excuse to suddenly start charging fees, I'll put it right back in ICANN. What makes you think they won't charge a fee for use down the road? No insurance, no ICANN. Well,
hey, Craig, this is Kurt.
Yeah, Kurt.
Rick Wilhelm, can I get in the queue?
Sure. Well, Kurt, and then Rick.
I didn't think Ken was done. Were you done, Ken?
Yeah, Kurt, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so, Ken, I think you're right. You posed two really good questions. You know, how does ICANN select somebody to provide the service, and how do we make sure the cost is limited? So I think that, you know, that's one of the recommendations we hope comes out of this group, really provides pretty strict guidance to ICANN as to who can provide the service, to whom zone file access might be granted, and, if there's fees associated with the service, who can collect the fees, and how they might be limited to cost. And I would assume that'd be somebody outside ICANN, not inside ICANN. And then, as far as compliance goes, I almost think this might be a way to reduce compliance costs because it's a cleaner requirement. But anyway, I just wanted to say, I would hope this group would provide pretty strict guidance or direction to ICANN how it might go about this.
You're next in the queue.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Rick. This is Rick Wilhelm. Just for Ken's point on the security perspective, I think that, so for one thing, Dave Piscatello has been helping out, working with Rod on some things. I'm also on the SAC and have eyes on this, not officially representing the SAC, but just from the perspective of security, just to add the perspective that security is being considered as we go forward. And I don't think that from a security perspective, as far as the payload of the zone file that's going to be accessed, that there would be any material change beyond which that would be implied by changes in the zone data as per the record types comment that I think that Jonathan had made earlier. So I don't think that you'd sort of made an oblique reference to email and spam and things like that. So I don't think that there's any discussion about the scope being expanded to include any kind of PII, personally identifiable information.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, this is Rod. I had kind of want to synthesize a bunch of the comments we've had here. If there were, let me do that, and then we can. If there's more people want to chime in, I think a lot. We just spent a lot of time getting. I think some of the things that we wanted to talk about in the next agenda item, which are the concerns discussed there. I think there were a couple of substantive things to look at as far as adding to the requirements side, or at least looking at. From the want to include the ability to type comments and thinking about different access types and some of the other points that were mentioned. I think that when we shift over to talking about concerns, we can talk about a bit about what's been presented already, because I think a lot of the things that were brought up there have been addressed at least at some point. We could get into what some of the proposed things are so far. But I think the whole purpose of this group is to figure out how to take the current model and make it scale rather than, the emphasis being on something brand new. So with that in mind, I think the problem statement captures the idea that we're trying to make this, what we're currently working with scale up and handle new registries coming in, potentially hundreds of new registries. This is a two-order or three-order magnitude problem issue, potentially. So I think that's where we're at with that. Anybody else with other comments on this?
Right. I think you created a perfect segue into the next item on the agenda, which are the community concerns, and we've allotted 20 minutes to that section. I think we've covered a number of those issues already, but I think we've just scratched the surface on them. I heard someone talk about malicious activity and someone talk about spam, and what I'd like to do is spend a little bit more time digging deeper into some of those issues, and I specifically have asked Ken to be able to speak to some of the comments that the registry stakeholder group have made, as well as Vladimir, who is part of that group.
Okay. Do you want me to kick things off here then, or?
I'll go after you, Vladimir. Either one. We're on file with state.
Your comment earlier that some of the concerns may have already been addressed or started to be addressed in the concept paper that you sent around. Maybe you could speak to some of those for a few moments, and then we could dig a little bit deeper.
Okay. Okay. The paper that we put out on what's driving kind of the issues here does get into a couple of different proposed models, but there's several of the concerns that were raised with the assumption that ICANN itself was going to be taking these things over and making the rules on distribution. And I think that what we've got actually is we wanted to have this group decide how that, or at least not decide, I guess we don't get to decide, but at least recommend models and who would be entitled to access, what potential third party type of operation it might be, or some other solutions, costs, all that kind of stuff would come out of this group rather than it just being some sort of an ICANN dictate. And then compliance and issues like that would be part of that whole model that was discussed. I'm getting some feedback. I'm not sure if that's somebody trying to say something or not. I think it's just me. Was there somebody trying to chime in there?
Yeah, it's Vladimir.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead?
I do agree that some of the earlier registry stakeholder group comments were based on a thinner set of data. But nevertheless, after reading Rod's proposal, I think there are still some issues that are not addressed in this proposal. For example, it's still not clear how at the moment registries do have control over who gets the data, and registries do have means to control this access and to the extent of termination of the agreement and switching off this access. So in Rod's model, how will the registries know who is accessing the data, and how will the methods of control will registries have over, let's say, shutting down the malicious users? So, if these issues with registries' control over access are addressed in the model, I think that that will make sense.
Quite a lot of man on that. I think I talked a little bit about that, but you're right. That doesn't really spelled out in the model. I believe I talked about reporting back to registries who's getting their data would be a responsibility of the aggregator. But I certainly think that passing through requirements and how that's done and the ability for registries to have a say in who gets their data, is that's something we definitely need to cover, and I think that needs to be handle this part of anything like this, so that everybody's comfortable that the current model, as much as possible, is preserved, and we're just making it more efficient.
Yeah, I'd like to echo what the comment that Kurt made, and that is that the requirements for the aggregator, you know, who gets access, how do they get access, for how long, at what cost, for what reasons, et cetera, that's the work product that is intended to come out of this group as advice to ICANN. So that's the work that we need to be doing. I think we'll probably get into that, you know, much deeper starting with the next call. The intent of this particular agenda item was to define what some of those issues are. Now, Vladimir, you said, you know, how do you turn off or terminate the malicious abusers? And so what's a malicious abuser? What's an example of a malicious abuser?
For example, that would be a party who is using the zone file for malicious activities, like sending spam or phishing or anything like that.
Craig, it's Ken. Can you put me in the queue, please?
Sure.
I think Ken could chime in.
Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Well, I would like to make one other comment as well. We had some discussions at the Seoul meeting.
I hear a lot of disturbance in the background, so please, could you please mute your phone if you're not speaking?
Can you hear me clearly, Craig?
Yeah, I can hear you very clearly, Ken. Thank you.
All right. The point I wanted to make very simply is we had a discussion with the ICANN staff at the Seoul meeting, and there was an indication by staff that they would still hold the registries to the existing contractual obligations, even if they set up a centralized zone file access, which in effect would mean that the registries would be required to continue the program of providing zone file access on a case-by-case basis. So, you know, it becomes almost duplicitous in most cases. That would be the first concern that I have that I think we need to at least explore with the legal staff as well. Maybe they've changed their intent this point in time, you know.
Ken, did you have a second comment, or was that the comment?
Yeah.
Mr. Rod, this is Rod. I'd say that's certainly a concern that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I will. I'll look into that from the ICANN perspective. I don't recall hearing that the registries would have to continue to provide the service in addition to any kind of aggregator or third party. I could be totally wrong, but I will follow up on that and get back to the group.
Yeah, I'm sure that the guy, Dan or John, can answer that question relatively quickly. It's a contractual obligation that would need to be modified by ICANN to keep us in compliance with the contracts.
Okay. I will follow up on that. Was there someone else that wanted to make a comment on this?
So, this is Rod again. There was the statement by the registry constituency on this topic. Has that been, those comments been sent out to the group, or can we... I want to make sure we capture anything that we hadn't talked about today in today's call in the concerns statement so that we can make sure we address all those issues in one form or another, because this is the key to making sure that this will work, whatever we come up with, is that those concerns are adequately addressed to make sure that the parties that we're asking to do something actually will be willing and hopefully happy to do so.
Rod, this is Ken Stubbs. I know that statement was forwarded to ICANN staff. Now, I can't actually speak to what's been done with it since it was forwarded.
Yeah, Rod, I'll send it around to the group. It would have been part of the larger collection of public comments on centralized zone file access, but I'll go ahead and send it to the group this afternoon, since the bulk of the other public comments that I'm aware of were supportive with detail behind that. So I will forward that.
All right, excellent. Yeah, I think the registry operators are the ones that have they're the ones that have the perspective on what their challenges are and all that, so we definitely need to address that. And I think that there have been some very good other concerns that have been raised by non-registry operators as well, so I think we've got a good set here. I haven't seen anything yet that isn't is an intractable situation, in my opinion. It's just my opinion, and their opinions are free. But I think that we have a workable set of issues that can be addressed, and those concerns can be dealt with, I think, pretty much on a point-by-point basis once we get them down.
There is one other concern that I think we need to point out that could be a result of something like this, and that is, and we pointed this out in our registry constituency statement, Rod, and that is that a practice like this can fuel the use of proxy contact services. You could run into a situation where you may be shooting yourself in the foot with respect to certain constituency members of other houses, and that is if you see a massive increase in the use of proxy as a result of concerns for who is mining and so forth, you may, it's one of those be careful of what you ask for because you may get it. And I'm guessing that if there are people there may be an expression of concern there as to how you deal with that as well.
So again, we can't hear you clearly.
One question, Ken. This is Rick Wilhelm. Could you clarify the linkage between zone file access program and increased use of proxy services?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Suppose that
Ken, your connection is really poor right now. You're fading in and out.
I'm sorry. I don't know. Can you hear me clear now? I'm sitting in my office. Okay. I was involved with the registrar constituency for many years and actually was chairman of a registrar group. If I was a registrar and you had these new TLDs coming out, this is an excellent way to accessorize purchases of domain names offering these proxy services. And I think that the kind of advertising that you may very well see as a result of that would be the fact that if you end up in a centralized zone file, and if for some reason somebody's able to hack into that centralized zone file, your data would be available, and there is only one line of protection there, and that is the line being offered by the service provider. And I just think that it will be it's just an ideal opportunity for an additional revenue center for registrars, and I'm afraid if it's not presented the right way, it could backfire for you guys. You could end up with a significantly higher percentage of proxy registrations as a result of that.
But proxy registrations traditionally protect who is data, which is not part of the zone file. So what data would be is, so let's say that I'm a registrant and I don't subscribe to a proxy service, and then what additional data would someone be able to get out of the zone file about me?
You're going over my head, but my security people in my registry have indicated some significant concerns. I think you'd have to take that at a much higher technical level.
Okay.
Talking about seed lists,
Yeah, because the data in the zone file, from having been on both sides of the proverbial registrar aisle, personally, the data in the zone file doesn't have any any information that is protected by a proxy service, unless there's someone has a proxy service that's different than the ones that with which I have some familiarity.
This is Rod. I think that I read through the registry constituency concerns. I think what he's getting at here, what they were getting at in the statement, was that there's a concern that if you have the zone file data itself, then you know what's in the zones, and then you can go out and mine the who is based on that data. So it's an enabler in the process.
It's an enabler, not a direct.
Right.
Yeah.
Not a direct thing. Okay.
Right. And I think we should address that concern in this. And it's an existing issue, so you know, I don't know that it changes that much, but it's certainly one we want to make sure to address.
Well, it's also one of the conclusions in a SECSEC paper 023 that's listed as a reference on the registry's statement. So you might take a look at that, as they specifically refer to non-publication of zone file data as a way of protecting who is data from automated collection. So, you know, these guys know a hell of a lot more about the security issue than I do, and I have to assume that any statement that they make like that is well-founded.
I'd like to get – do you remember who wrote 23, Rick?
Let's see what the internet can tell me. Is the Whois service a source of email addresses for spammers? And that was dated SAC023 is October of 07. And typically these don't. It was prepared by the inimitable Dave Piscatello under direction of Rom. So that's. That's the one. It was out there in 07. So it's about who is. So
right. It sounds like they're pulling an argument out of there. I think we should have Dave probably, you know, as part of our work here, he could probably address that particular issue if he helped write it.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic for next week's agenda.
Can I speak up on this? This is Jonathan.
Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
So what I suspect, to paraphrase, is that the zone file would be used as a pick list to determine what new domains could be looked at to harvest Whois information to obtain spam email addresses.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the concern.
So I don't see a way around that, though.
Right, it can happen now.
All right. Let's have Dave actually work on addressing that if he can. I think that will be all of them be enlightened on what the intent was with that.
I just have one other question, and I'm not trying to put Jotun on the spot, but Jotun, for years you've been involved in running a CCTLD. Am I correct there?
Yes, I operated the .cc registry from 97 to 2001.
Okay, fine. Now, the question I was answering, what I was curious about is, does .cc provide zone file access? And if they don't, what are the reasons that they have elected not to provide that access? So if your answers are 7 years old, then it may not be relevant here, but I just at least was trying to find out.
I mean, typically at the time, Ken, it's a seven-year-old answer, but... you know, I think the GTLDs, if they weren't contractually mandated, may not do that. I know there's a lot of folks who have tried to obtain the zone file for .de or .co.uk, and they simply don't provide that information, like you'd mentioned earlier in the call. And I think they're just not contractually compelled to. I think the problem there, if there were forced or compulsory you know, reasons to provide the zone, that lays more to the relationships between CCTLDs and ICANN more than it does the topic at hand, which is the GTLDs that have the contractual obligation.
Thanks for the comment, Jonathan, and for yours as well, Ken.
Yeah, this is John Levine. Can I get into the queue?
Go ahead, John. Floor is yours.
Yeah, I'm actually aware of one ccTLD that does provide zone file access, which is .us. So, you know, I think we should, and I don't know of any others, so I think we should try to arrange things so that if ccTLDs want to opt in, they can, but otherwise we don't worry about them.
That's a good point.
And I believe on .us that was a requirement of the NTIA.
Oh, yeah, it's in the... It's in the agreement with NuSTAR, and indeed,
yeah,
indeed,
yeah.
The process is very similar to the one for the gTLDs.
Yeah.
So I think that, and this is Craig again, that any gTLD registry or ccTLD registry that wanted to use the services of the aggregator to provide zone file data, or if they're control, or if it's mandated, that it's open for both types of operators. Yeah, I think that's probably a good time to move away from item number 3 on the agenda. I'll go ahead and circulate the registry stakeholder group comments and also work on getting the broader set of public comments from the applicant guidebook on this subject to the group as soon as possible. Item number 4 is it talks about data collection and statistics review. In light of the fact that we need to follow up with Brian Cute on some input from Afilias, and item 4.1 talks about the review of the summary of ICANN public information cache, which is the fact that the number of zone file access passwords that have been granted by each TLD, each gTLD registry operator, is part of the publicly available monthly report that they supply to ICANN. So if anybody's particularly interested in how many zone file access agreements NuSTAR has provided for .biz. You can find that right on the website. I did get some information from VeriSign, and what I will do is write that up and circulate it around. The other item we had talked about is, do we need further information, and should we consider a questionnaire for TLDs? And I think we ought to wait on that until we get the input from Afilias and the input from VeriSign. So, seeing that there's a little more than 5 minutes left in the call, what I'd like to do, you know, barring any objections from the group, is move on to item number 5, which is a discussion of using the paper that Rod Rasmussen circulated as the framework for the concept paper, the deliverable out of this group. So, Rod,
so,
you,
sorry, Craig.
Yeah.
Can I? This is Vladimir. Can I add something to item 4? May I ask the some of the consumers of the zone files to provide information from their experience how typical the zone file agreements are? I mean, for somebody who has signed agreements with multiple registries, can someone provide an information whether they are more like identical or they are more or there is a diversity of them?
If there are any consumers right now that could speak to that, that would be great.
It's Tatiana. I can provide my experience on signing documents for different registries as a registrar representative.
This is John Levine. I'm a consumer of them.
We can do it on the list, actually.
Why don't we do that on the list? That's a great idea, Vladimir.
So, Tatiana and John, can you please forward your experience to the list? Thanks.
Okay.
This is Susan's domain tools. I will speak up as well on the list.
Thank you, Susan. So, Rod, will you lead off here on, you know, in our planning meeting, we had talked about taking your paper as the and using it as the framework going forward. Would you like to, can you speak to that for a few moments and, you know, as we wind down the call?
Sure, and I think you know, this is kind of in the interest of time, because I've done a lot of putting an outline together and filling in a lot of concerns and issues and the like. It would make I think that a lot of the work that would need to come into our paper is already there, so it would give us a base to work with, and we could redline, obviously, quite a bit, but also work in, I think, a major section on the issues we just spent a lot of time talking about today, which are the concerns, et cetera, about A, how the model works, and B, where, you know, the implications of creating, you know, this type of a tool, if you will, and then be able to basically take this as a jump start to get the work done. Not necessarily taking the information in verbatim, but really just using it as a baseline to work from. That was it.
Is there any discussion on among the group on about this? I think it's a good idea. I think Rod's done a tremendous amount of work already, and that'll get augmented by some charts and some graphs that Dave Piscatello agreed on last week's call to pull together, and that would be added to the framework. And then, as Rod mentioned a moment ago, supplementing it with some new sections where we start to talk about the harms or the concerns, and then also a requirements section where we start to answer the questions of, again, who gets access, for how long, under what circumstances, et cetera, et cetera.
Craig, correct me, this is Vladimir, correct me if I'm wrong. We are not required to provide one single proposal for solving the problem. We can provide multiple proposals, is that right?
We could provide multiple proposals, yes.
Okay, good.
And I think that's important. I put a couple of different flavors of things in the paper already. And I think part of, you know, the working product of this group is to come up, you know, refine that, or, you know, propose new ideas on doing that. But the, you know, if you come up with something that most people like, but you have different, there's different options and, you know, add-ons, whatever you want to call it, to getting to your goal, I think it's important to offer those up, because there's no one way to do this right, I don't think. And so getting information in front of people that, in a broader sense, you can take a look at, and you know, beyond the scope of this group, will be very helpful.
So, are there further comments? We're right at the top of the hour, and we could close on time, but I certainly open the floor to closing remarks.
Hey, Craig, it's Jonathan. I think I answered a little tersely in response to Ken Stubbs on the CCTLD access. I believe that, if I recall correctly, that it was who is harvesting that was our primary concern as a CCTLD, and why we would not provide access to the zone file. It was probably our most important point, but there were other points.
Thanks, Jonathan.
It plays into the registry statement on this that Rom and Dave put together.
Okay. Hearing no further comments, we thank everyone for your time today. We encourage energetic discussion and dialogue on the list. And as always, we'll get you out an agenda a day or two in advance of the call. I will send out an email a little bit later today with a couple of the items that I committed to, and also will make a plea for folks to let me know if this time is a conflict for them or not, and we use that to determine whether we need to consider shifting the call time. So thanks, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Craig.
Bye.
See you.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.